I told her I hate to come behind state examples because the federal level is so not sexy. It's slightly boring. But having said that, if you need to move around, move, because I have my Fitbit on, and I am impressed and proud to say that I've had about 20,000 steps since I've been here. Whoa. I'm not sure what that's going to mean for my muscles once I return to Atlanta, but it has been quite impressive, the walk that my secretary was able to get me such a nice, lovely hotel all the way at the Superdome. So I've been able to walk very far to get to the convention center. So I just said that to say, get up and move around if you need to exercise. What I'm going to try to do in a short period of time, it's a lot of information, is to bring together what we fund at the national level and to show you kind of how this ASTO work fits into that. So it is not work that is being done on an island. We have a lot of different initiatives that are pouring across the country to help us move the needle on heart disease and stroke. I am the branch chief for the program services branch, which houses almost all of the funded programs for heart disease and stroke, with the exception of two, the sodium program and the stroke registry sit in the division but not in our unit. But all of the other funding mechanism streams that you'll see are housed in my unit. So I'll show you a map at the end that I hope will give you kind of a breadth of the totality of the investments that we have on a national level in terms of heart disease and stroke. So I won't go into this, but we know chronic disease is a major problem. We know we spend a lot of money on it. 7 out of 10 American deaths occur because of chronic disease, and it is weighing heavily on us in terms of our healthcare system. We also know that heart disease and stroke are leading killers, and what we know is that there are about 1.5 million heart attacks and strokes each year. Those account for about 800,000 deaths. And we also know that heart disease and stroke are contributors to racial disparities in life expectancy. And that is a big group of folks that we are currently working on to try to figure out what strategically we can do with our interventions to kind of get at these populations. As you've heard earlier, these folks are almost always in care. And so we're struck now with how do we get these people that are into care, that are hiding in plain sight, actually to be diagnosed with hypertension and also to come under control. So the thing that struck us most this past year, if you were following some of the vital signs that come out, was that we put out a vital signs that spoke to preventable deaths from heart disease and stroke. And what you will see here is that over 200,000 deaths are preventable. And by preventable, we mean those that are attributed to the lack of preventive health care or timely and effective medical care. Out of that report also came the information that blacks are twice as likely to die from preventable deaths. And not only blacks, but African-American men in particular are at greatest risk to die from something that is totally preventable. So we got a lot of work to do in this area. I like to use this map because the Division of Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention knows that hypertension is the gateway to these diseases. And so we've really taken all of our work and strategically focused it around blood pressure control. And what you see here is a map that kind of shows you a picture of what it looks like for 36 million Americans that have uncontrolled hypertension. And that equals the state populations of Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee combined. So we're talking about a large number of people, and we strategically use this Southeast Corridor because that is where we see these greatest rates around hypertension and stroke in the Southeast Corridor. So we've aligned ourselves in our center, and our division sits in the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. And so we've aligned ourselves into four working domain areas. And the first one is epi and surveillance, where we look at gathering information and data and disseminating it and actually using it to shore up the work that we do across all of our interventions. Our second work is in environmental approaches, policy and systems, and environmental changes that are improvements to underlying causes of disease, where we look at the built environment, we look at nutrition, we look at sodium, we look at other things, and those are the types of initiatives that are built into the second domain. Domain three is the domain where we primarily see the bulk of our work for heart disease and stroke prevention, and that is in the health systems intervention area. So we are working largely across systems and across large networks to get what we need done because we do it at the population level. And lastly, we have our community clinical linkages, which is increasingly important as we partner with health systems, because what we know is as we treat folks individually, building up to populations, they go home. And it is in those communities where we have to have wraparound services and other resources that help to sustain the behaviors that we are often asking them to develop and implement as a result of a clinical visit. So we work in these four areas, and likewise, the division has strategically positioned itself directly in that direction to look at our program priorities. So as you see, you'll see some of those same themes: the clinical quality improvement, enhancing our surveillance, our environmental priorities around sodium, our community clinical linkages. And as we move along, I'll show you programs and go over programs that are funded strategically in this area. And all of our work in terms of this and our clinical quality improvement just strategically aligns with what you've heard in the state examples. We're focused on our EHR, HIT, a lot of protocol development, a lot of systems work and environmental approaches to get this done. So each step of the way, we've made sure that we've aligned strategically our priorities with what we put in the field, i.e. in terms of our funded programs. So this is Million Hearts, and for those of you that are familiar with Million Hearts, you know this is the focus of Million Hearts. We have a health disparities focus also. We primarily focus on the ABCs, aspirin when appropriate, blood pressure control, cholesterol, and the S for smoking. And so we've done work in each of these areas to shore up the work that we're doing in terms of our work around hypertension control. So I must say to you that in terms of our Million Hearts work, we fund about 100 or so million in the division around hypertension control and around this work nationally. But all of the work that we do in hypertension control rolls up into Million Hearts. So that when we talk about the programs that are going on here, there are Million Hearts. They are part of the entire portfolio investment of work that we have that supports the Million Hearts initiative. So it's pretty much one and the same. When I show you the Million Hearts funding, it is what we've branded Million Hearts, but all of the work of the division supports the Million Hearts initiative. So most of our work in Million Hearts in this arena is going to be in the clinical care area, where we are working on our EHR, HIT, systems approaches to get folks who are kind of slow to come to meaningful use, and get those from meaningful stage one to stage two, and working to get our patients set of medical home models throughout the country. So all of the work that we do is evidence-based, and we couple all of these evidence-based strategies, as I'll show you, in our funding to actually have an impact on hypertension. So these are our two funded programs that are branded Million Hearts, and we have two. We fund the Y at the national level, and the Y has four locations, and they implement hypertension in community settings. Those community settings, and I write them down, they're three in Florida and one in Massachusetts, so we fund those in order to track what they're doing around blood pressure monitoring. Now, the Y is working with the American Heart Association with Heart 360, because what we ask our evidence-based strategies ask you to do is that if you use self-measured blood pressure monitoring, that it has to be tied to clinical support. So it is not enough for us to send somebody home with the blood pressure measure. We have to close the loop on that information exchange so that if you are taking your blood pressure, you are at some juncture feeding it back to your physician or your care team so that it becomes part of your treatment regimen. The Y is doing that, piloting an electronic database so that as their participants take their blood pressures, they would then be able to go home, upload it into a system, that would then be automatically able to be accessed by their physician provider. And so speaking to what the entire group has spoke to, we work with the Office of the National Coordinator, with the Regional Exchange Centers, and now with the Quality Improvement Networks, we're trying to close this loop on this interoperability. And that simply is the ability to not be able to share data across systems and across streams. And so what we're trying to do is it's very hard. It's going to be a lot of work, but we're trying to get it set up so that if you go one place and you have data one place, it should be easily facilitated or looped back into your care at your care location. And right now, as the other presenters have alluded to, it is hard to do that because different systems, when you buy these EHRs, do different things. You've got to have an IT person come in to help you get it done. I'm a computer person. I'm a junkie by nature. I have, like, I roll with a lot of gear. I got my Fitbit, iPad, my phone. I mean, my kids and I, we kind of roll heavy IT. I just said all that to say I've learned more about this IT than I thought I would ever know about IT. So this goes to show you, even if you're an IT junkie, there is so much more that you don't know, I can promise you. So, but it's been fun learning, and why it's helping us to do that. I won't go into ASTO, of course. We've got 10 states in the first cohort. The new states, and I'm glad to see Georgia and some of the other new states here, they're in the second cohort that will be working very fast over the next 9 months to kind of do some of the things Oklahoma was able to successfully do. So having said all of that, those were the Million Hearts branded programs. I'll take you quickly through the portfolio and investment of what we fund throughout the Division of Heart Disease and Stroke. And like I said, all of this work rolls up into our Million Hearts effort. So we have our Wise Woman program. Our Wise Woman program is actually a program that gets its participants from our BSEP program. So it's a little different. So from our National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program, when women come into that program for their mammograms and screenings, they're tested. If they are found to be at high risk for heart disease or hypertension, they get referred into our Wise Woman program. And our Wise Woman program is a very unique program. It serves women that are either underinsured or uninsured, ages 40 to 64. And it brings them into the program, and it offers them lifestyle programs through different community-based entities like the Y, Weight Watchers, and our diabetes prevention programs to help them deal with the risk factors, or to actually help them if they are diagnosed with hypertension to get their hypertension under control and managed. So that's one of our legacy programs. It's been around for a while. There are 22 programs, and of those 22 programs, two serve Alaska Native and American Indian populations. So our stroke registry program is a program that funds 11 states. It's state-based registries for stroke care. It is in place to automatically improve the care of persons who have onset symptoms of acute symptoms that come on for stroke, and actually takes them through a quality improvement process from the EMS to hospital to the next transition of care site. And so we've been able since 2005, mid-2012, to service more than 250,000 patients to help ensure that the stroke patients do get improved quality of care, and really trying to cut down on the number of disabilities that are associated with stroke just from inadequate treatment. Our sodium reduction program, some of you may have heard this. This is a large effort for us around hypertension to decrease the sodium in the diet. Our sodium programs work with food distributors to increase the availability of low-sodium food products. They also work to enhance or develop strategies that will help in helping some of our food producers to go low-sodium. And that has been a struggle because, as you know, some of the fast foods, readily available products in the grocery store that are quick to eat are high in sodium. I myself, self-disclosing, was addicted to the Trader Joe's wonton soup and never turned the box over, just loving it. And something just said, look on the back of the box. And it was like 1,100. And I just almost fled. I thought, oh, my God. I don't know that I was sad that I saw 1,100 or I realized I couldn't eat it anymore. It's kind of a toss-up. But we've been encouraging folks to really look at what you buy when you buy it in terms of your sodium to start to work to decrease sodium in these areas. So we work with child care education centers, particularly schools, to help them look at low sodium options, work sites at high schools, and with programs in independent restaurants. So this is 1305 for those of you. How many of you are familiar with the acronym 1305? Okay, for those of you that are not, I will say it in this way. It's like a mega FOA. So 1305 is our state and public health actions cooperative agreement. And it is the first time that we have at the Chronic Disease Center brought together four chronic disease areas. Although we've all known for years that they have associated risk factors, I don't know what we were thinking, and brought them together and decided that we would try to leverage the work of each of those areas synergistically to see an impact versus trying to do it one health issue at a time. So it's a multifaceted initiative, and it is really far-reaching. It is for those states that have had to participate, it's been a love struggle at first, you know, collapsing all of these things into one central thing, trying to figure out how to do it as we've been struggling with the states to try to see how to make this work best, how to have greater efficiencies in the work without overburdening the work. And so, like I said, this is about four divisions. So the division for heart disease and stroke, division for diabetes, Division for Physical Activity and Nutrition, and the School Health Branch all came together with their funding to implement this one particular program. So we have project officers from all areas that sit on these teams. We try to maintain the integrity and the fidelity of the appropriation lines, because although Congress in its infinite wisdom said, oh, we'd like for you to coordinate, they said, oh, but keep the money separate. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, but we've been able to work through it. And so it's working, it's taking time, but it will be worth the effort and the outcome as we move down the road. So in this particular funding announcement, we have two sets of strategies that we work on for these interventions. And what I want to share with you first is we have two tiers of states that are funded to do this work. We have our basic plus states who get what we call our core capacity funding to do the work. And then we had 32 states that were funded at a slightly higher level to do what we call this more enhanced or systems level work at a different level. So in our basic plus states, these are the strategies that they primarily work on, and that is to promote the adoption of the food service guidelines and nutrition standards, including sodium. We also ask them to work in our domain three, which is promoting blood pressures. Now, remember, in promoting blood pressures, we're not talking about the traditional communications campaign. So when we say promoting blood pressures and promote awareness here, we are talking about work with our large healthcare systems to find those persons who are already insured, as we've already discovered, that already see their physician at least once or twice a year, who probably had a blood pressure reading already greater than 140 over 90, but have yet to be diagnosed with hypertension. So promoting awareness means for the clinicians and for other healthcare systems to go into their roles to find those persons that are hiding in plain sight. And this is just one example. I won't go through all of them, but we mentioned D.C. We mentioned the importance of National Quality Form Measure NQF-18, which looks at the number of adults 18 to 85 who've been diagnosed with hypertension who've been controlled during the measurement year. And so what we find is that when they just start looking at the roles they already have, this is not seeking new persons, you'll see that they've been able to look at their dashboard and to find about 3,000 persons with hypertension and about over 1,100 of those that are already in care that aren't even diagnosed. That's significant. And when you look at the District of Columbia, which is targeting African Americans in certain wards, they were able to find almost 4,000 people that were undiagnosed that were already in the system. So this is what we mean about promote awareness and to bring those folks that are already hiding in plain sight into care. Our first strategy for our enhanced states is similar along that way, which is working with our HRT, EHR. I won't go into that. We've talked about that, but it's really mining the records, developing patient panels, patient registries to find these folks, to get them into care, whether it's a reverse referral process or going through asking them back. We do ask all of our sites where we have multiple funding streams to work together. So in this instance, the state of Alabama, with their Million Hearts ASTO funding, was able to work with their Wise Woman program, which was the women's program, and they found about 7,600 women that they need to bring in for care. So these numbers become almost mind-blowing when you think about all they did was put a simple algorithm into an electronic record, and this is what you get within a 30-minute run. The second strategy is just around looking at team-based care. We've talked about coordinated care, and so we encourage everybody to do team-based care. As you notice, Connecticut is looking at a process to identify high-risk patients to bring them into a self-blood pressure monitoring program. They're primarily looking at African-Americans, but always tying this particular strategy back to clinical support so that the information gets back into care. We fund, as Oklahoma mentioned, I think, 1422, and I use these numbers because they start to kind of seem and sound the same, but 1422 is 1305 at the local level. So we make the distinction, I know, between saying the government is never really creative, if you know. We don't really have a shop that says creativity lies here. So the titles are as bureaucratic as we get them. So this is the local level work of 1305, and what this work does is it seeks to go from those systems into the community to now to find those wraparound services and things that we need to do. But it is doing one thing, more importantly, it is looking at health disparities. So it's not enough for us now to say we know folks are sick, we know you're out here. We're saying, where are the pockets of sick individuals? Can you get to them, and what community services can you use to wrap around to them? In addition to that, we fund the Pacific Islands. We have the Federated States of Micronesia. We're in Guam, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. And this is really about a surveillance effort, because what we know in these particular areas and territories is there's not enough good data for us to get a sense of what needs to be done, although we know the work is great and the magnitude is great. So we've started funding them to help curb this growing crisis of chronic disease, but to really start to pinpoint where these hot spikes may be and how we work with those. Our newest FOA is Good Health and Wellness in Indian Country. They're actually having a two-day meeting in Atlanta now that's focused on hypertension and diabetes. We have 11 American Indian tribes and 11 tribal-serving organizations that will be working with the tribes to actually implement some of these same strategies at their tribal and community level. Now, this is the map, table rather, of all of the programs, and I'll walk and do my Vanna impression. So this is the Million Heart ABC, and as you notice, all of our funded work and all of those projects I just went through are listed here on the left. And these check marks just represent the strategies that they're in. As you notice, there's ABCs, policy system and environmental changes, electronic health record, health information technology, team-based care. LSP is the lifestyle prevention programs. We have community health worker options, and then we have self-management programs. And if you look across, you'll see that most of the work that we do covers almost all of those areas. So we've tried to strategically fund across our evidence-based strategies to saturate the country with all of the strategies that we can to try to move the needle ahead for heart disease and stroke. And lastly, when we do this work, we don't do it in a and if, or we do it in a both and scenario. So when I first started thinking about how to approach this, I thought about targeted universalism, which basically is a theory that was born out of poverty initiatives in the early 60s, but it is a theory that talks about how to target interventions as needed for some folks, but also not losing focus of population-wide interventions that we need to have with a health equity lens. So whereas we have a population-wide focus, we also have a targeted focus. And it's kind of the notion is, as the tide rises, all the ships sail, I just want to make sure all my boats come together. So this is our approach, is targeted universalism. We'll find those pockets of folks who really need care, but not leaving behind the rest of the universe that also needs this care also. And this is a map, and I'm really excited about this map. It's one of the first times we've been able to show all of the funding. So the legend to the right represents all of the funding that we have around heart disease and stroke on a national level.
And each state, as you can see, has some work, some level of initiative going on around hypertension, whether it be stroke or hypertension control. So this is exciting for us. It's been a good year in terms of our funding this past year to kind of saturate the country with these investments to try to move the needle on hypertension control and stroke. And so as you see, if you can find your state, it's kind of hard to read the grid, but there's a lot going on. And we're happy to say that as we move into this new arena of health systems work, where public health has kind of not been in this arena in the past, but as we move into the health systems approach area, that we will start to see some traction, and especially some good traction around hypertension control, because it is the gateway for other diseases. And if we can get this piece kind of together, then we'll be in good stead in terms of decreasing those rates, especially for African-American men, African-American women who are disproportionately affected by this disease. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you.